Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
To inform, inspire, and empower Alcoholics Anonymous sponsorship, locally and internationally, to be their very best, both personally and spiritually. This is the mission of RumRadio.org, an internet radio program dedicated to carrying the message of recovery to a world plagued by alcoholism and addiction. Alcoholism and addiction is the number one health issue in our world today, and RumRadio.org is actively participating in the solution. Interviews with a plethora of people sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Live Sundays at 9 p.m. Central Time and rewound again on Saturday and Monday. Tune in to 12-Stepology at its best on RumRadio.org.
Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and RumRadio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. That would be the spiritual universe. Actually, it's right there, right in front of us. The only problem is we can't see it. We will eventually, though. Make no mistake. I'd like to acknowledge WNAH. It's Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who afford us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Alabama. And they do this as a public service presentation. Hoyt is the station manager and a friend of mine, and he's allowed us to do this for quite some time. Now he doesn't charge us anything. Hoyt hasn't taken a day off in about 10 years. I've seen him through incident and accident and illness, and he doesn't take a day off. He always makes it into work. I think it's kind of insane. That's why I kind of like the guy. I don't know how he does it or why he does it. He has no one else to depend on. You know, it's funny sometimes when we have nobody to depend on, sometimes we just have to go right to God. And that's the guy that we depend on. He depends on God, and God sees him through, and he gets to do what he needs to do. We also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time. I gratefully like to introduce my co-host, Harold B., a family intervention specialist. He does a fine work with troubled families, and I personally believe the families are the basic unit of our society. And as the family goes, so does the nation. I believe today, right now, as I'm speaking, there's young men and young women who are out there that have no guidance. They've gotten no correct principles growing up. They've grown up like making a lot of weed, having no one to mentor them. Right now, I think this is a critical time. We see these outrageous. Anybody hear that, or is it just me?
No, I can hear it.
What is that, Harold? Do you know what that is?
I'm not sure what it is.
Banging. Okay. Well, it's just, okay. Anyway, so yeah, I thought maybe it was coming from you. What I'm saying is the children today are inundated. The fabric of our society, the moral fabric, is being torn. I believe in the family is the key to this, and a lot of it has to do with alcohol and drugs, because there's no one there to tell them it's not a good thing to do. There's no one to train them. They're living on the internet in a two-dimensional reality. They're rewiring their brains. Some people would say it's about the violence of the internet games. Most boys will be on the internet playing 10,000 hours by the time they're 15 in isolation. And so we're wondering what's going on, and I believe it's basically a lack of family guidance. So Harold's doing a fine work with these families, and I believe that the family is the key to all of this, including the drugs and the alcohol consumption. Harold?
Hello, everybody. Thank you, Joseph, for that nice introduction. And I just want to take a moment to mention that we're here as our way of giving back. This radio program and the RumRadio.org website doesn't make any money. In fact, Joseph sinks his hard-earned money into keeping it going and improving it. So I really appreciate that and appreciate the opportunity to give back and to clarify some things. And, you know, in a way, Joseph, the kids are being trained. They're being trained to take alcohol casually, to try to fit in with the crowd by drinking as early as junior high and elementary school. They're sneaking alcohol into the classrooms in their Gatorade bottles and empty Pepsi cans. They're sharing it with one another. They're then experimenting with pills that they steal from their grandparents' medicine cabinets on the weekends to bring to school on Mondays. There's a lot of kids that are hospitalized and are never the same again because they're taking they don't know what they're taking. So, they're being trained. They're being trained to do all the wrong things by the bad examples that their parents are setting. And the parents are doing that because they were taught to do that by their parents. It's really, we're in a pitiful state of affairs with the families in our day and age. And I don't see things getting better. I see them getting worse. The average kid, 8 to 18 years old, spends, now this is average, 7.5 hours a day, 7 days a week on screen time. That means either their computer, their phone, the TV, the movies, some kind of screen time. So boys are losing the ability to socially interact with girls. It's, well, I could go on and on, but we need to, and I love what my first sponsor said years ago was that drinking to excess is a search for God at the wrong address. So that's why I'm doing the work that I do, and that's why I'm on the radio tonight, and I'm looking forward to our program. This is people getting together to increase their conscious contact with God. That's how I see it and what I'm really dedicated to. So I appreciate the chance to be on the air. I'm going to have to pause, put my phone on mute for a minute and get my computer out. I'm returning from a trip, but I'll be back with you guys in about 10 minutes.
Great. Thanks, Harold. You always have words of wisdom to pass by. Tonight we have an interview with a real special guest. It's Malcolm H. from the Higher Power Hour. It's a web. It's a web-based radio, and I think you're on FM too. Isn't that right, Malcolm?
Yeah, we're pretty much on any place that that will get us on, but. We're based in Santa Rosa, California on 1350 AM KSRO.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah.
So we'll get to you just in a moment. I'd like to start the program off on a spiritual basis. And in the rooms of recovery, we usually start with a prayer, which it's called an invocation. We invite in the spirit. And usually we end the meetings with a prayer, which is called a benediction. It's an agreement that the spirit had been with us, and I like to do that. It gives us a good firm foundation for the program, advice in the spirit. I also use that in my recovery work with sponsees. When I get a new sponsee, usually it's a fellow who just got his beginner's chip. I believe that's the hot time. Page 93 in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, by the way, we are not Alcoholics Anonymous. We're not Narcotics Anonymous. We're not CA Cocaine Anonymous. We're more like Paranoids Anonymous, except nobody will tell you where they hold the meetings. We're Rum Radio. We use the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous as the basic text, because all the other basic texts and all the 12-step programs come from that original understanding, and everything else has been taken in parts and parcels from that. I like to use the template, the original template, I think is very clear and concise. Of course, the book itself is very humbling in itself when it says it doesn't, we don't know everything. It just says more shall be disclosed to both you and to us. And the book is only suggestive. And it's meant to grow. As we grow spiritually, the understanding of the book goes spiritually. The big book is not scripture. The big book is in a spiritually enlivened work based on scripture. So it was set up for a specific group of people for a specific problem area. But what I found is most people have some kind of addiction or distraction where the big book and the 12 steps and 12 traditions would come out and help just about any kind of spiritual ailment that manifests itself in addictive behavior. That's my experience. So I get the newcomer and I ask, the first thing I ask him, have you had enough? If he has had enough, he usually doesn't say anything, but once in a while somebody will say, what do you mean enough? And I'll say, have you had enough humiliation? Have you had enough pain? Have you had enough alcohol? Have you had enough? And believe it or not, some people will say, well, I don't know. Well, he's not ready yet, so he's not ready for me. Or he'll say, yes, he's in enough pain now. He's going to go along with just about anything. That only is telling me. He's also telling himself. And I say, well, are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Yes or no? If he's really in a lot of pain, he wants to get out of that pain, yes. And then I tell them, you can get well from this disease of mind, body, and spirit, but there's certain things you have to do. Then I carry around Clancy's 7 questions. It's on the Rum Radio website. It's under the sponsor tab, how to find a sponsee. Scroll down. You get the 7 questions. It's all in Word. You can paste and copy. Carry those with you. Stephen Covey said, luck was nothing more when preparation meets opportunity. If you're prepared, the opportunity will manifest itself. That's my experience. So I hand them the 7 questions. I said, okay, first thing I need you to do is answer these 7 questions, and I need them back tomorrow. Here's my phone number. I expect your call. And basically, I'm done until he calls and tells me he's done the work. If he doesn't call, what he's telling me, he's either not ready or he's not ready for me, which is okay in any event. He might need someone else that's not as aggressive than I. That's my personality. Different sponsors, different personalities, different techniques, etc. So if I do get the information back, he's taken simple instruction and he's willing to go to the length that I gave him. And we start off, and one of the first assignments I give him is I wanted him to get a home group. That's a group that he goes to on a regular basis, and that's where his lifeline is going to come from. And I want him to get 20 or 30 names and phone numbers from men with men, women with women, when possible. We find that works out the best. It's easier to relate to the same gender. But if you can't get someone of the same gender, whatever circumstance it might be, and you've tried, then you work the steps. That's the key. We always work the steps. But we find the like gender works to be a little bit more efficient and works out. Sponsorship relationship is intimate and can be easily misconstrued. So we don't want to muddy the waters if we can avoid that. So one of the first assignment is I want you to call up each one of the names on the list, one of the men, and this is your lifeline now. Because if your sponsor's not always going to be available, so you're going to have other people you can call during times of stress, and the stress will come. And I tell them the reason why I have them do this. One is that it gets them to pick up the 500-pound telephone and ask for help. Oh, brother. So you're going to ask the fella if you can recite the third step prayer. It's found on page 63 in the basic text of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So called the surrender prayer. The second reason I have him do that, this is a way for him to connect up with that home group. He gets to know their names, and they get to know his name. Third reason is the third step prayer is going to encapsulate what we're going to try to accomplish by working all 12 steps. having a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. That's the one thing which we're aiming for, folks, as a sponsor, is to get your sponsee into a spiritual state of mind and spirit so that they can withstand the cravings for alcohol. So now God's going to do for them what they couldn't do for themselves, but it's a process. It's not an overnight, although it can be done, I believe, more timely than thorough. I think it's important to get them through that process as quickly as possible. And fourthly, and the fellow he's calling might have been thinking about picking up his first drink of alcohol, and when your sponsee calls him, probably will not. No guarantee, but in the meantime, there's a good chance he will not pick that up. So now your sponsee's already into service work, and we find that service work is one of the main ingredients of long-term sobriety, attaining and maintaining sobriety in AA and the sister recovery groups. And this is the prayer. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and do with me as thy wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that? Amen. let's see, I think I lost Malcolm. I don't know what happened. I'm the only one here. Malcolm, come on back. Malcolm, where's that? Let's see. I wonder what happened to... Did I scare him off? Anyway, well, our interviewee is having difficulty getting on. Oh, here he is. I think he's back. Malcolm, did we lose you for a second there?
Only for a second. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, good. Yeah, I was asking for an amen on the end of the third step prayer, and I looked up, and I was the only one in the church.
Well, amen,
so
brother.
Thank you. I amended it myself. I said, okay, look, I have so many words and so few thoughts. If I have to carry this on, I'll figure something out. Malcolm, our listeners are really interested in you. And if you have any questions, as the audience out there, the folks who are out there in recovery or people just passing by and happen to hear us, the guest call-in is 949-534-0621. Again, that's 949-534-0621. Now, we have a chat room, and Harold said he's going to be going on his computer and working that. Usually Carmen works there, but I hadn't heard from Carmen tonight. So if you would like to call in, you have any questions or suggestions, you're more than free to do that at that number. So Malcolm, tell us now, we'd like to do the what it was like, what happened, mm-hmm. and what it's like now. So tell us, what was it like? What got you in here?
Well, I'll tell you what got me in here. It was, as most of our stories go, it stopped working. The drinking and the using just stopped working. But how I started out was basically like most of us. I was a little young and basically aware that I felt ill at ease within my own skin. Particularly, I felt like somebody had dropped me off on planet Earth, and I was just biding time until they picked me up again. That my job basically was to sit here, observe and record everybody, and then when I was done with my report, they'd come and get me, and I'd report to whoever dropped me off. But evidently that never happened, and so I was sentenced here to a life on Earth, and I became intensely aware that life on life's terms wasn't working for me. My parents, God bless them, were trying to raise a family of five kids with the tools that they had available to them, and we have a history of alcoholism in my family. And what happened was is that I got the wrong information, whether it's environmental, familial. What happened for me was that I got the wrong information, and I was desperately trying to find out, who am I? What am I doing here? I was always fear-based as a kid. I remember going into kindergarten, and where the ism developed for my alcoholism early on. We used to have, I'm sure if you can remember back to the time when you was a kid, when recess happened, everybody was out on the playground playing, and I was the kid trying to figure out who can I hit up for more money so that I could buy chocolate milk, because I didn't like white milk, but I like chocolate milk. And what happened for me was after recess was over, if the kids were taking timeouts on their blankies, what I would do is wait till everybody had nodded off, and I'd go around and I'd finish everybody else's chocolate milk. So you see, the ism for me didn't get much better as I grew older, you know, and then I began to get distracted by, you know, the worldly distractions as I got older, you know, things like cars, girls, puberty. And the big book talks about where each and every one of us has a fundamental idea of God. And what happened for me was that I began to move further and further away from it, but I had also developed coping mechanisms that allowed me to deal with life on life's terms, but not in a very healthy way. I had made an executive decision around 11 years old that I was never going to let anybody get close enough to hurt me again or get close enough to know me, because I didn't know how to relate. And as I began to grow a little bit older, I began to understand that I was basically running the show. When I decided that I made that executive decision, what I had actually done was take control of my life, and that's what happened. You know, the big book talks about every man and woman has a fundamental idea of God. Well, I did away with that and decided that, you know, that I could run my life a little bit better, and that's pretty much where the trouble began. As I moved away from my idea of God and people tried to foist their idea of God on me, it just wasn't a good mix, because their idea of God didn't work for me, and I didn't see where my idea of God fit in. So I began to move a little bit further away from it through all of the worldly distractions that came up upon me as I grew up. And finally,
would you say you were more of an atheist or an agnostic? Could you draw the line?
Well, I actually had a belief in God, but what happened was is when people, your peers, or I was raised Catholic. Let me put it to you that way. I was raised Catholic. Mom was a Baptist, but either side wasn't really working for me. On one side of the coin, I was going, you know, to church on Sunday. And there was a fella, you know, in a pointed hat, long robe, reciting in Latin. I didn't understand it. These people were standing up, sitting down, you know, and they do this on a regular basis. I didn't understand, you know. I just didn't get it, you know. And then on the other side of the coin, mom's raised Baptist, went to a church, and there were people who were screaming to high heaven and partying, and, you know, in the name of God, and every so often there'd be an usher assigned to Mrs. Jones who, like, on cue, eyes rolled up in her head, passed out because she'd gotten the Holy Spirit. And I didn't understand that. So there were two extremes working for me. And I couldn't get to my God from that point, because the distractions were really intense. And so I just decided that I would take control. I would just do my own thing. And sooner or later, you know, as I mentioned, the inevitable happened. I never stopped really believing in God. I just got distracted from God. And enough distractions came along, and then alcohol, which was the biggest distraction, came along and ultimately helped to get me back to my belief in God. It was a strange state of affairs, because, you know, as I grew into my teenhood, I would indulge with the fellas in my peer group. And we're doing all sorts of things, but it was always alcohol that I cleaved to. And what happened was it gave me the ability to say everything that I needed to say, to be the person that I always thought I could be, and just to fit comfortably in my own skin. And it was a love affair that right off the bat, I figured that if one was good, two was better. And that incident happened under a situation where I was involved with a young lady who became my first wife. And it was a situation where performance anxiety came up, and I knew that there was some gin downstairs. And what happened was, I'd always seen it on television. When anybody was nervous or had to calm down, what's the first thing they do in Westerns? What's the first thing that they do in serial dramas? They pour somebody a drink to calm them down. Well, I got a drink, and I calmed down. But what happened for me in that instance was that I became aware that it had given me something that I had been searching for, you know, and I knew that I was going to have more. And I figured if one was better, two was more. And the love affair began with alcohol in my teens. And it gave me abilities far beyond my wildest dreams. And then I wound up marrying my high school sweetheart. And even then, when I look back, I can see that the disease was progressing because when I did an inventory about my life, I found out that what I thought was love actually wasn't love. It was about possession. I learned how to understand what unconditional love and what God's will for me is from being in a program of recovery. And it made itself known to me when after alcohol stopped working. So in my teens, it was the fanfare of having a lot of fun. I got into the young lady that was my high school sweetheart. I ultimately married, and we got divorced. We were together for 4 years, but during that 4 years, you know, the illness escalated. And I remember her words to me. She said, "Well, I'm not leaving you because I don't love you. I'm leaving you because I do love you." And anybody who's read the book understands exactly what that means, you know, that's been through the book and the big book and understand that, you know, we create a lot of wreckage. I created a lot of wreckage. And I didn't understand it until I came into recovery. And I remember I was 4 years into recovery where it hit me like a lightning bolt. That's what she meant, you know. That's what she...
I think we lost Malcolm again. I was going to say Malcolm was looking for God. And we all do that in recovery. I was like, this is craving. This is something from Carl Jung, or Jung, have you pronounced? He was the one of the premier psychiatrists at the time. And his craving for alcohol was the equivalent on a low level for the spiritual thirst of our being for wholeness, expressed in medieval language, the union with God. Like that's very profound and interesting. That's what Carl Jung had found out, that most alcoholics is researching, drug addicts too. It's a connection. It's a spiritual connection to have with God. And we get that with alcohol and marijuana. I'd have that connection with God. I felt very spiritual when I smoked dope. Then I realized that, you know, of course, it's a deceivement. It's really not real, but at the time, there seems like there's that connection. When people talk in tongues, for instance, I was curious about that. So I was hanging out with evangelicals, and they would start talking in tongues, and, you know, and they would, but there was no one there to interpret the tongues, but they would get this enlivened sense of higher spiritual planes. And what I realized is that when they're talking in tongues, they're basically just mouthing certain simple words that have no meaning, and they keep repeating it. In essence, they're chanting. And that when you chant, like the Buddhists chant, you've slowed down your mind, and in certain states, it's called alpha, beta, and theta. And when the mind slows down, it gives you a sense of a higher spiritual state. And that's the feeling they get in by when they talk in tongues, so slowing down the mind. And the alcohol and the drugs have a tendency to slow down the mind. And, of course, now you have the benzodiazepines. You know, they have another effect, which gives you a higher spiritual state. It's a false sense of a higher spiritual state. It's not real. But it seems real at the time. It seems exciting at the time. It's very otherworldly. And everybody likes that, you know, that having your mind really sharp and clear, but you're not reading, you're not building up your mind. Actually, what we found is that alcohol destroys brain cells. Most drugs, matter of fact, methamphetamine, they had pictures of methamphetamine where the methamphetamine would show that the brain cells, you could actually see them, was boiling in the brain while they're smoking. The methamphetamine would seem like it was boiling the brain, and the brain cells were dying in horrendous amounts of, the numbers were just astronomical. Come on, Malcolm. I don't know what happened. He's not coming back. The big book tells us that rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly tried to follow our path. That those that will not or cannot give themselves to the simple program. They're not at fault. They seem to be blonde that way. But there's those two who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders. They can get well if they have the capacity to be honest. So all of this is about, all the recovery programs have to do with honesty. I think Malcolm made it back.
Yes, I did.
Malcolm. Yes, okay, good. I was babbling on. I'm from North Babylon. I don't know if you know that. From across the clock tower of little knowledge, east of Eden and mm-hmm. south of Sodom uh-huh. and Gomorrah, Babylon, Babylon, Babylon. I gave him a quote from Carl Jung mm-hmm. about man's search for God in medieval language was through alcohol.
Yeah.
It was a way to find God. You know, we had
absolutely.
That sense. So go ahead, please continue.
Well, I believe I left off where my first wife, and there were three all told,
yes.
but I didn't understand what love meant until my first couple of years early in recovery, where it hit me like a lightning bolt. And I realized that that's what she was talking about. And this is something like about 20 years later. I had a profound revelation around that, and I began to understand what unconditional love was. And part of that was through sponsorship and being of service. But that came a little bit later on. What transpired
Your jumping off point.
The jumping off point was when I had realized after two marriages, and I had a career in radio that wasn't working for me anymore. And I had actually stopped drinking 2.5 years before I decided to pursue any form of recovery, because my third wife was my drinking partner. And what happened was that it was two strong wills against two strong wills that weren't doing any type of God's will. And basically, long story short, was we would have killed each other. And I knew that I had to stop. And I did stop, but as it says in the big book, and one of the things that, you know, while reading it, that I discovered is that the main problem the alcoholic centers in his mind. And it hit me like a ton of bricks when I read that, because I understood that, because in the time that I wasn't drinking, all of the stuff that I had kept down by drinking started to come back up. You know, those little voices that tells you that you're worthless, that you're never going to get what you want in life, that basically you're a worthless human being, and life's just not working for you on any level. So why don't you just go ahead and do the real jumping off point, which was where I was at. And one day I woke up and decided that today was a good day to die. And this was in sobriety. This is 2.5 years without drinking. This is with no program of recovery. So I understand on two levels of what drinking and not drinking can do. You know, if you're not in some type of program for living, in my case, it was a program of recovery that saved my life. Then basically you're left up to your own devices. You're a miserable human being, and you tend to make everybody else around you miserable too. And I was aware of that. I woke up one morning and decided that today was a good day to die, and I was on my way to kill myself, and I had been exposed to Alcoholics Anonymous for a long, long time. through various court systems and dealing with law enforcement. And I didn't get it, you know. But everybody kept telling me that I was a dry drunk and that I needed to go to AA, and I didn't see the connection. And what happened basically was when there were no more houses on the street for me, for doors for me to knock on, and I decided that I was going to kill myself, I decided to go to a Wednesday night men's meeting and see if there was any hope there, you know, half-heartedly hoping that nothing would happen so I could finish what I started out to do. And the other half looking for something, that little fundamental idea of God that I talked about earlier, that was there. It was somehow shining through, and it said, go, you know. And the other part of me is saying, don't go. Just finish the job that you started out today, you know. But I went. And I remember when I walked in, I was scared. I was really scared because I didn't know what was going to happen. I was there this time for who knows what reason. But, you know, to make a long story short, when I walked in and these men encircled me and offered me coffee and a seat. And well, one of the funniest things that happened was that actually scared me was I walked in. And I asked if there was a meeting there, and one of the fellas said, yep, and we've got a seat, especially for you, and we've been waiting for you. And that sent a wave of fear through me like you'd never believe, because the first thing in my mind was that, oh, no, the CIA has found me, and they're going to take me back home to atone for all of my sins. And they said, come on in, you know, grab a cup of coffee, sit down. And I did, and the most amazing thing happened, I'll tell you, the most amazing thing happened, and that was after the meeting started, my mind shut up. It was quiet for almost 60 minutes. You know, it took me 5 minutes to calm down, but once it started, I can't tell you what I heard. All I know is that my mind was quiet after 2.5 years of not drinking. I couldn't believe it, and what I decided that I was going to do was find more meetings, because I wanted to find out why my head had shut up during that time, and I didn't make the connection until I started going and I started seeking answers, and I realized that I was hearing things like there's a solution, you know, there's a way out of your pain, you don't have to do what it is that you've been doing, there's these funny things called the steps. There's a solution for your living problem. And the biggest thing was that they told me that alcohol was a symptom of my living problem. It was only the symptom, and that I needed to address some causes and conditions. And that was the key, because I realized they put a name on it, and I'd been hearing it for years, admitted that I was an alcoholic in bars and various other drinking establishments. And what happened was that I finally heard it. And I held on to it, you know, like it was the best thing that ever happened to me. And I started going through the process of recovery, you know, from the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I found out was that it's a spiritual program, and that there were principles behind the things that were teaching me how to live life on life's terms, the steps. And, yeah, I couldn't tell you exactly what all the principles are, but I know the steps, and that when I'm working them, I'm living the principles, you know.
Did you get a sponsor? How did you find your sponsor?
My sponsor actually found me. Yeah, he found me. And I kind of like it. I kind of love it that way, because sometimes what I see is a lot of, at some meetings that I go to, I see people identifying as newcomers, but I don't see the old-timers going after them. You know, it's kind of like, well, you got, they tell the newcomers that you need to reach out for help, and that's okay, but the way that I was taught was that you put a bullseye on a newcomer, and you go and talk to them, you take them out to coffee if you can, and you find them just like Bill and Bob did in the old days. They were really proactive about going out and finding the hopeless drunks and to, you know, show them what they had, and that's the way that I do it. And so that's the way my sponsor did it. After a little while, he happened to notice that, you know, that I pretty much a scared little kid, and I'm a pretty big guy, But it's like being a, you know, when you're in that state of mind, you're like a, you feel like a little kid in this big body that doesn't quite know how to fit in it. And that's the look that I had. And he saw that look, and he came over, he started talking to me, and he knew how to hit me right. And we started talking, and he related, and he started talking about the steps. And he asked me if I was ready, and we did the same thing. You know, I called him every day, read up to the part where it's where it says in the big book, he talks about we were now at step three, and then got to the part where I was thoroughly convinced, you know, and moved on to the fourth step and the fifth step. And I'll tell you, one of the most freeing part of working the program of recovery, the big book, that fourth and fifth step was the big, one of the biggest steps that ever happened to me, because it allowed me to face some fears and also getting those fears out, not only on paper, and that was a scary issue because now there's documentation. All the stuff that I had up in my head was now on paper, so now there's documentation. You know,
how long did it take you to get to the fourth and fifth step?
I'd say it was a process of about probably about 2 to 3 months, because my sponsor and I we read the book together, and we did about maybe actually I'd probably say between 3 and 5 pages, because he would explain things to me, you know, what they meant, what the language was about, and how it related. So he was giving me history as well as the practical application of what I was reading and how to apply the step that we were on in my daily life. And believe me, every step that I was on, a life situation inevitably would come up that related to that step. So I know God was working in my life around that, because it seemed every step that I was on, there was a teaching point that allowed me to exercise the principle behind that step, and it was amazing. You know, I couldn't deny it. You know, as I haven't tried to do for you know, many of the miracles that have occurred in my life, but that was a biggie. So it took us about 2-3 months, and when I told them that my fifth step to him, that was really freeing. I had a good foundation, you know, up 1, 2, and 3, and I was kind of apprehensive about, you know, telling them all my stuff, but I did anyway, because in the process, in that 2 to 3 month process, we had developed a relationship. See, and that's what I understand about steps 1, 2, and 3, is that not only are you developing a relationship with a power greater than yourself, but you're also developing a relationship with another human being that is an instrument of God, you know, also that power greater than yourself, that
right.
is helping you to realize and get closer to the God of your understanding.
Amen.
So when I told my fifth step to him, and, you know, it was the most freeing thing on the planet for me, because at last I felt like I was here. And the bottom line is, for me, is that, you know, if you're in a program of recovery, you've either done something to somebody or somebody's done something to you. Well, hello, welcome to the human race. You don't have to really do that anymore. You know,
right.
And
we got a call, Malcolm. I'd like to take a call. Somebody might have a question for you. Oh, they
sure,
left.
Go ahead.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Well, it's too late. He dropped. He didn't have a minute. He couldn't wait more than a minute. A caller, if you like, I was just going to get back to you. But go ahead, Malcolm. Continue on. You're
okay.
On five.
Well, here's the thing about the fifth step that I found out that it came to me in waves. And the fifth step really isn't about trusting another human being. What it is, for me, it's an exercise in trusting the power of my belief in a higher power. Because what happens when you talk to that human being, you're talking to somebody who's equally as fallible as you. But you're trusting in God that he will hold your confidence. And if
yeah.
he holds your confidence, you have adequate proof. What that they're not going to give you away, that there are human beings in the world that have principles they live by. But even if he did go out and get drunk the next day and gave all my stuff all over the world, what I know is that I was willing to take a chance and that everything's going to be okay because I laid that foundation in 1, 2, 3, and 4. And that was the key.
That's good.
And that made me one with the human race. And then it was just a matter of, like, eliminating some of my character defects. You know, 6 and 7 right there, being willing to...
You know, they say in the big book, steps 6 and 7 you can literally cover with your palm of your hand. It's not really much, I believe. it's not much. And that's the step that separates the men from the boys. But when you look at it after 4 and 5, there's not much. And I tell you, I think what happens, in my experience... Mm-hmm. So I speeded up my process a little bit because of it. I would lose, if I'd lose a sponsee, I'd usually lose them on 6. And I could never say, well, why 6? And I believe the reason is because step 5, it tells us in the 12 and 12, step 5 was the beginning of a true kinship between God and man. So now you're making a relationship with God, right? So, but there's another component with having a relationship with God. The pain dissipates. You're not in pain anymore. So the pain's gone, absolutely. And the pain is the motivation that I found that gets most folks, that's what caught me, through the steps. So once the pain is gone, and I'm less than halfway through, you know, like, so now I'm going to meetings and life, and I'm not having any of the consequences of drinking alcohol. I'm being accepted by a new group, and I got a relationship with God, and I'm staying sober. Is that not enough? Go ahead, Malcolm.
Oh, I totally relate to what you're saying because it is the shortest step in the book.
7,
we
actually.
We talked about this last night. Is it 7? Yeah.
7 is the shortest, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Not much in 7. 7 is that you're going to let God do his thing and you're not going to judge
it
when it happens.
Right. Yeah. And that began a process of being willing to let go of some of those character defects because even after, oh, yeah, by the way, I celebrated 27 years of recovery last week.
Congratulations. You're an old-timer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it just occurred to me that after all this time that it's 4 days before St. Patrick's Day. And see, once I got into recovery, St. Patrick's Day just didn't come up on my radar anymore because – guess what? I wasn't celebrating St. Patrick's Day traditionally the way that I did before.
Had no impact, no meaning.
You know, it snuck right up on me before I even realized it. Said, oh, somebody's St. Patrick's Day. Oh, yeah, really? Well, I just celebrated 27 years. Oh, wow, it's 4 days before St. Patrick's Day. So, yeah.
Your fourth step now is going to lead you to your sixth step, where you're going to get your character defects. We usually use the 7 deadly sins. That's usually the agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And not so much as a sin as a recognized list of character defects, akin to the human condition. It's been like that for millennium. No sense changing it now.
Absolutely.
But the thing, though, and we talked about it in church today, too. I'm a church-going kind of guy, and Jesus is my higher power, and I'm okay with that. And we were talking about pride, and what I've come up to the agreement is that pride is the number one deadly sin, and pride because, and I define it as the disavowment of God or the need thereof.
Mm-hmm.
Natural man has been an enemy to God and has been so since the fall. So pride will always go before the fall. So we're playing God as long as we're prideful. We're playing God, and that's what my experience is. Is that like yours?
Oh, that's mine too, definitely, because that means I'm running the show. That means I'm taking my life and my will into my own hands, and there's ample evidence enough to understand that I don't do very well when I do that. Not at all.
We've tried, though.
Absolutely. But, you know, every once in a while, you know, being human, they still come up, but they come up less and less, and because of the tools that I have through the steps, is that I'm able to reconcile them a lot faster today than I did yesterday. And that's the part about the spiritual progress that I really love and understand is that yes, I'm going to fall short of the mark. That's the human condition. But what happens is I get a chance to rectify and correct those sins, as they say in the big book, and as many people would want to say, you know, that I have tools that I can make amends, I can correct those, and I can and get on the path of spiritual righteousness, man. So it works out. At least for 27 years, it's been working out.
Well, I prayed this today, and we did this also in church today about perfection. They had this deal on perfection, and you know it's in the scriptures about perfection. But I've read that spiritual progress was perfection.
Yeah.
That this is a journey and not a destination. As long as we're progressing a little bit more than we decline, we're on the right track. We
Absolutely.
Get certain tools. I tell my sponsees, look, you got to do step one, and that there's no wiggle room on step one. You can't drink or drug, otherwise all bets are off. Then the rest of the mm-hmm. work comes to nothing. We're always doing step three because you're giving your will up and you're taking it back in this endless cycle back and forth a little less, hopefully, as the years go on. You're always doing step six, who's entirely ready? Nobody's entirely ready. You can only be as ready as you are at any given time. Step seven is in God's time, so he's always on the job. And then 10, 11, and 12 are the growth steps. So tell me, I'll say you got six, gone. You've identified your character defects. You turned it over to God. And now we're going to have to be willing to do something. Tell us about eight.
Oh, the amends process. Yes, the amends process. That was a... I didn't really have too much trouble with eight because I realized from the other steps that I had to be willing to make some changes. And by the time I got to eight, you know, I became willing to make amends and looked at my life and how it progressed, because by the time I got to eight, I could definitely see that my life had gotten better. And so I was kind of getting more excited about getting to the 12th step than I was about starting at the beginning. You know, so I could actually see progress of how my life was going and how I was, you know, being able to interact and to consciously be able to use these tools to make intuitive decisions, as it talks about in the book, that I wouldn't trust before. And so when it came to making amends, my sponsor said, you know, well, some people are going to accept them, some people aren't, but it's about cleaning up your side of the street and taking actions to correct the wrongs and being a living example of not committing the same wrongs again. And I became willing to do that.
Yeah, that's the key, and not to do it again. That's the repentance process. That's the whole part of it. If you agree not to do it again and you're really sorrowful about it, you don't repeat it. But you know what happens? It's not any harder to be born twice as you be born once. I like to think, if you fool me once, shame on you. If you fool me twice, shame on you. And if you fool me six more times, shame on me. You know, I'm a slow learner sometimes. I make the same mistakes over. I give it up and I take it back. But, you know, I don't have to do it as often anymore, and that frees up a lot of time.
It does. It does actually, because now you don't have to you don't have to clean up the wreckage of your past. You can get with the wreckage of your present and move that away. So, that's what I really like about it. You know, is cleaning it up. And you know, step nine, making the amends. They pop up in the weirdest places, and I always know when I need to do one. I'm always aware of it now. You know, that doesn't mean that I'm always going to do it. You know, because there's some fears around it. Maybe there's some work or writing that I need to do on it, you know. And, you know, but that comes pretty much in the 10th step for me. You know, when I look back at my day and see if there's anything that I need to straighten out. You know, that little quick inventory that lets me know that have I wronged anybody? Have I stepped on anybody's toes? Have I done any harm to myself? And if so, what can I do to make that right? And that's a conscious process you know, where I'm engaged and I'm involved with my higher power to make a decision for the betterment of my life daily, you know.
And, I like to think of it this way. I hear in meetings all the time, I'm going to do another fourth step. You know, I'm going to do another fourth step. And well, my understanding is that step 10 is steps 4 through 9, taking in as a single package in the present. If there's something that hadn't come in the past, there's no reason to do another fourth step. If it's unless it's in the past, then it's done. If this is something that's happened in the present time, then it's step 10. Step 10 takes us to we've cleared up the old right now. If something comes up in the past that hasn't been resolved, some people feel like they have to do, they're not really good program doobies unless they're working. They worked a couple of, the fourth and fifth step again. This is about the past. 10 is the key.
Well, you know, Joseph.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, you're absolutely right, and I'm a proponent of, following, the book, pretty much as it is. I'm a big book thumper, don't mind saying that.
Sure.
And it's given me a lot of freedom as far as intuitive choices and also things that you realize aren't necessarily etched in stone, in black and white. You know, there's some freedom of movement there. But I also understand that, I work the fourth step over and over again pretty much when I'm going through the big book with a sponsee, I get to that indirectly, but as far as the more personal experience with the tenth step is that, I cleaned up that wreckage. If there's anything that shows up from the past, I take care of it in the tenth, and it keeps me in the present. And it seems to work that way. I don't see anything in the big book that says, here's my thumping part coming out, that says that you need to continuously do four steps over and over again.
No, I don't
because
see that
by the
either.
Time you get to that, by the time you get to that tenth step, you should have a pretty good understanding of what the program is about if you've been sponsored correctly and you follow the clear and concise directions in the book.
I like to think 10 and 11 are connected. I mean, some of them, one hangs alone and 12 hangs alone. But if you look at it, 2 and 3 are connected, 4 and 5, 6 and 7, 8 and 9, and 10 and 11. And I put 11 this way. Prayer is the quarterback. Meditation is the feedback. And self-examination is the goal line. Which connects up with 10, because with 10, the unexamined life is not worth living, but a life in recovery is to die for. Malcolm?
I'm going to steal that.
Please. Have a good time. If you go to the website, I got all kinds of stuff on there. It's really quite the treasure trove, if I don't mind.
That's right. You were telling me about that,
When we're doing 10 and 11, actually what we're trying to derive. Now, if we have to make an amends, and what I've learned is when you make an amends, it's easier to eat crow while it's still warm. I've learned that for sure. The longer I put off making that amends, the colder that crow gets and the harder it is to swallow. If I do it right on the spot, it's a pinch. It's like a lie. The lie is sweet to the taste and then sours, and the truth is bitter to the taste and then sweetens. It's like that with an amends. I screwed up. Do it right away while the iron is hot, and people will he's doing his program. He's trying to do the right thing. They accept that right away, and you move on, and everybody forgets about it like it never happened. But you string this thing out. You got a problem down the road. Now you might need a fourth step if you wait too long to clear that wreckage. But what you're doing is, what did you do wrong? What character defect came up that you did something wrong? So there's a character defect involved now. So there it is. So the character defects come in, and then 11 is self-examination. So here we go. We're asking God again to show me my character. So now this is the growth process. What character defects have I not yet addressed? I can't see them. I got a post on the site. It's called No One Ever Forgets Where They Bury the Spiritual Axiom. When any time I'm disturbed for whatever reason, there's something wrong with me. So how do you do your 11th step?
Well, you know, it's really a simple thing, and you hear this, you've probably heard this a million times, is that prayer is talking to God and asking the question, and meditation is waiting for the answer. And that's pretty much how I do it. If there's a question, something that I need to address, you know, there are some times where you just can't logic things away. And most of the time, my solutions, in fact, I'd probably venture to say 99% of the time, my solutions are spiritual in nature. There's a spiritual question that I have to ask, and it usually handles anything that's got to deal with what some might term a logical explanation of what's in front of me. But I found that, you know, the spiritual solution, you're talking about spiritual axioms just a second ago, is that they work excellently in providing a spiritual and a logical reconciliation to whatever situation that I'm in.
Right. Spiritual concepts are not relegated to any specific group or understanding. They just are. And when we use them in the big book and we use them in recovery, these are spiritual concepts that have worked over millennia. We don't have any corner on them, except they're in an understanding that can be used by the alcohol. Bill W. said, AA was spiritual kindergarten. And the big book is an understanding for children.
And that's why it tells us we must expand our spirituality.
Right.
You know, our conscious contact with God.
Yeah, I tell folks this way. A lot of folks will say, and the friends in recovery will say, well, I was saved by grace. And I says, well, that's true, but I want you to consider this. There's, according to Google, you know, the all-knowing Google, in 1,000 years, the archaeologists are going to say they all commune with an all-knowing God named Google. And according to Google, there's 144 million alcoholics in the world. And in 1981, there was 2 million in the rooms, according to the GSO, in the world. In 2010, 2,100,000. 29 years later, we grew by a whole 100,000. So if we had 3 million, we would have flatlined.
Yeah.
So you have to consider that some of the things that we're doing that we turned into doing is not working for us anymore. So I tell people, what happened to the other 44 million? So we got 2 million. We know about 2 million are in the rooms, right? What happened to the other 142 million? They've got stepchildren. They don't get grace. What's that?
Yeah.
Because
It said
in the scriptures, we turn towards God and then he turns towards us. We took an action. I believe we're saved by grace after all that we can do, that after all that we can talk, that after all that we can think, that even after all that we can pray. The magic words in AA is action and more action, for faith without works is dead. Malcolm?
Absolutely. I believe exactly what you're saying. I have a thing that I like to tell my sponsees is that, you know, along the grace subject matter is simply this, is that, you know, when I was out there and I didn't know that I didn't know, you know, once I knew, it was basically you cannot not know. So, you know, God took care of me in all of my ignorance while I was ripping and running out there. And even when I wasn't even a victim, you know, in my cups, don't like to use that word victim, but I didn't know that I didn't know. I was purely ignorant, but I was searching for something. And I think that's the key, is that as long as I was searching, didn't know what I was searching for, or I couldn't get to God from the inside at that particular point, God was helping me from the outside, and I lived in the grace of God until such a time where I totally surrendered and let him in, you know. And because I let him in, I cannot unknow that. I cannot know that. I could try. I can try and do it consciously, but you know, I cannot go unconscious on that. That's the bottom line. You know, at least for me, I found him. Know that he exists. I know it's a God of my understanding. I know that it works. And how do you compete with that? You know, how do you disavow all of the miracles that have happened in your life, big and small, and say that they didn't happen? I can't explain them, but I'll tell you.
It goes like this.
I know that they
happen. Once it's given, you got it, and you can't unknow something.
Right.
Now, step 12 tells us, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, that's the one and only result we shoot for doing all the steps, the result.
Mm-hmm.
We try to carry this message to alcoholics, and to, that's our primary purpose, and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And like you said, I had this from Cahill Gibran, spiritual awakening is the most essential thing in a man's life and is the sole purpose of being.
Mm-hmm.
The 12th step. How do you work your 12th step?
Oh, you know what? I love doing that part because I can see on my worst days when I'm having problems, I go out and find somebody to help. It's really very simple. And you know, when you're in the rooms and or you open yourself to the possibility, and not just in the rooms, this applies to, you know, practicing those principles in all of my affairs. It means on the job. It means in my relationships, romantic or friendly. It means how I approach my work. Just about everything that I come in contact with, I carry the message of recovery and the principles behind the 12 steps, which enable my recovery. And the quickest way for me to do that is to go to the rooms and search out a newcomer and to be there for them. And it's and for me, it's pretty much a numbers game. And I haven't figured out what the numbers are yet, but I know that I get the people that I need to sponsor, evidently because God has found it necessary in his infinite wisdom to say, you know, you need somebody to work with today. And they show up, and I have a full plate, but it's knowing that there's a, you know, what do I want to say, my cup runneth over with alcoholics in my life for me to be able to carry the message of recovery.
Well, it's all about service. All right. I have the principles. You know, they're hard to remember. I usually have my sponsors carried around. I forget them most of the time. I have them in front of me. But each step has a one word. Some I looked on the internet one time. There was three different, and some had different things. But and there's really no agreement to them either, even with the GSL. But this is pretty close. Honesty is the first one, to be honest.
Yeah.
Hope is the second one. Hope. Then we have faith, three. Courage is four. Integrity is five. Willingness is six. Humility is seven. I like to think of humility as like underwear. It's essential unless it shows, and then it becomes indecent.
Yeah. You know,
brotherly
one of the greatest
quotes. Pardon me?
I said, you know, one of the greatest quotes that was in the big book that really stood out to me in my early recovery, and this was one of those things that went, oh, that's what it means. And I can't remember where it's at exactly in the big book, but it goes, it is only through repeated humiliations that I learned the true meaning of humility.
Yeah, that's
And that one, that was a keeper.
Brotherly love is eight. Nine is justice. Can mercy rob justice? I always like to say that. Ten is perseverance. 11 is spirituality. And 12 is service. And I'll tell you this.
Yeah.
When we're in the service of fellow beings, are we not in the service of our God? And we're in that
Absolutely.
Service. And in that moment, are we not divorced from self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity? And in that service and in that moment, is that not when we make our conscious contact with our Creator, who lives from moment to moment, eternity to eternity, life everlasting? The magic words in AA is action and more action, but faith without works is dead.
Right. I
so
totally
what do you
agree
do now?
With you.
So what's your thank you. What's your passion now? Tell us about your passion.
Well, you know, my passion, I've got a lot of passions, but I just wanted to touch on that the service aspect of Step 12 to sort of like a piggyback on what you were saying. There was a study done recently. It showed up in one of the psychology mags. I can't think of which one it was, but I remember being excited about hearing it. They had done a study on about 8,000 alcoholics, I think, and found out that long-term service in Alcoholics Anonymous helped people stay sober longer in recovery. You know, it was about service, you know, and it surprised me that after all this time that a psychology magazine or the medical community, as it were, would acknowledge something that we've known for years. And they just recently came out with another one more recent that is aimed toward teenagers as far as service is concerned. They're trying to get to teenagers and tell them that, you know, if you want to stop the relapsing, you know, get involved with service. And, you know, my view of the way to get involved with service is work those 12 steps and take the show on the road. So, which leads into what my passion is. I have a program, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, called the Higher Power Hour. And it's an open-ended program. Basically, what it is we have a show where we it's not AA or NA or any of the other 12-step programs. We're not affiliated. But what we do is we have a show that's mixed with music, and the music punctuates basically wherever people are in the shares. We pick one person and we interview them. It's like we have a meeting, and what happens is that we record it, and we break it down to 10 one-minute vignettes, we present what it was like to what it's like now, and we find appropriate music to punctuate that wherever they are in the shares, and it turns out pretty good. We had a show that was on today that was just before your show came on, and I'm excited about it because I get to present and open the doors of recovery to a different audience. I'm not so good at the talk show circuit. I tried that, and you know that's where your expertise comes in, because there's a million different ways to get the message out there, and we all have our little niche. And sure. I've always been involved with music. And so, what if I could use, you know, music to be able to punctuate a message and bring people in that way, so that those who have fears about recovery, that's just another way of coming in. You know, music has its advantages, and people can relate to music. And as a popular form of entertainment and also as a way of reaching the heart, I get to use my talents and my recovery to be able to take the message on the road and reach those people who are either open to receiving the message or may have questions about it or maybe had gotten a bad turn from someone or maybe they had heard, you know. I get to open the doors on that. And music is an excellent way to help people get to the heart of the matter in some instances. And we've been doing it now for about 4 years now. This is our fourth year.
Oh, wow.
Where we've been on the air. And we have a situation, too, where the people at KSRO, magnificent station, and I got to get a plug for Maverick Broadcasting, too. They stuck with us. And actually, the general manager, Kent Bukestad, talked me into, after the first year, on staying on a little bit longer, because I was doing everything. I was producing the show. I was going out and trying to get people to sponsor it. And my first year, I walked into him and said, you know what, I'm done. I can't do it. And he talked me into staying and made it possible for us to continue the show. And, you know, now it's 4 years later, you know. So that was a miracle because, you know, the dream is still alive, even when I didn't think that I could continue the dream, you know. It's about alcoholism and the substance abuse. And we just basically feature the testimony of people who have reclaimed their lives from it. And, you know, it's an open-door platform, basically for anybody to get a better understanding and participate in recovery through their own spiritual beliefs, music, and most importantly, a God consciousness. Most importantly, a God consciousness. So,
How do I find you?
I love doing it. You can find us on Facebook, probably the quickest way to find us. We do have a website, but I do a lot of my operations through Facebook because it's an excellent venue to meet people. The website, of course, is higherpowerhour.com, but I would suggest that you go to Facebook, where we're a lot more current as far as the things that relate to the Higher Power Hour with news articles and feedback and things of that nature, entertainment news in the recovery community, et cetera. Check out our Facebook page, the Higher Power Hour Facebook page. It's pretty easy. You just go on a Facebook and you search for Higher Power Hour, and it pops up. And anything else you need to know, you can check out the website from there, thehigherpowerhour.com. And
now, is it the Higher Power or just Higher Power?
It's either or, thehigherpowerhour.com or higherpowerhour.com. We've got both domains, either one that you hit, you know, it'll take you to the website. And if you wrote The Higher Power Hour on Facebook, it would still, you'd know it because of the icon symbol that we have for our Facebook page and the one that we use on our website. So it's real easy to see and hard to miss.
It's a heart, isn't it? It's a sacred heart. Is that it you're using?
Yeah, it's a heart with it's a heart with wings around it.
Ah.
And it's, you know, I like it because it's very comforting. When I look at it, one of the reasons why I selected it, we kind of designed it that way, was that wings across the heart. It has a lot of symbolism attached to it. You can look at it and say angels over your heart. But there's something, you know, that I think is very comforting about the logo, and when we put the Higher Power Hour over it in the way that we have it pictured on our website, it just really speaks, you know, to, I don't want to sound prideful,
yeah,
but
spiritual,
or pontificate,
it's
but
spiritual connect, it, yeah.
Yeah, it speaks to some spiritual salvation, you know, to sort.
We did a story recently on Sister Ignatia, and mm-hmm. I've been peddling that around. It's on the website. It's on the front page. And Sister Ignatia was I have the title of the piece is "The First Chipmunk Started with a Habit." Sister Ignatia. Yeah, that I usually get somebody's attention, and she was She was a nun. And she worked with Dr. Bob at the Akron Hospital, and she helped him with the 5,000 fellas that he worked with initially. You know, we hear that he sponsored 5,000 men. That was the 5,000 was his patients in the Akron Hospital. And what she would do is, when you sobered up after 6 days, it was basically a detox, and you would sober up in 6 days, and she would give you a sacred heart, a Jesus Sacred Heart medallion.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And yeah. Sacred Heart it reminded me of your logo. That's why I mentioned this. And she would give you this up with the agreement that if you she gave you that, and I think a little book of prayers, and she would tell you that if you were thinking about drinking, you needed to give the medallion back.
Ah, okay.
Not drinking.
That would have been pretty hard.
Thinking about drinking, you needed to give the medallion back. And, you know, this little nun, 90 pounds, and this was her calling. You know, she was real dedicated. And in the story, gives a little bit about Ann Smith, too. And I think she's one of the unsung heroes in AA. We never hear about Ann. You know, we know more a little bit Lois now and Bill and Bob. But Ann was Dr. Bob's wife, and she was instrumental in the beginning too. Very largely so, but we don't hear that. So when I saw the Sacred Heart medallion and I saw your logo, there was a connection. As a matter of fact, today, a fellow, I was on Facebook, and he said that he'd like to get on Rum Radio, you know, to do an interview, and he was a musician, and I didn't know your format, and so I said, well, maybe you could do like you wanted to play music, and I said, well, maybe you could do this, you know, we do you what it was like, what happened, and what it was like now. I said, so maybe in between you could put a, like a little song to it to punctuate your recovery.
Uh-huh.
So I had no idea, and it was funny when you said that. I go, oh, how do you like that? Just because he was a musician and he wanted to play. You know, we're not doing the music end of it. This is a talk deal, but anyway.
Yeah.
So, okay, so I get to you from Facebook and from that, and of course you're always looking for interesting people to tell their testimonies and how they did it. We encourage each other. My sponsor used to tell me that the reason I got a chip was that, because at one time I said, well, I don't need a chip because this is a one day at a time, and that was all about ego, and so when we picked up our chip, and my sponsor said, he says, yes, it is all about ego, your ego. He said, he told me that the reason you go pick up a chip is that it's part of the service work to show that even a jerk like you can get sober. It gives hope to the new man. Go get your chip.
Get out of yourself and get stepping.
Yeah, that's it. Right. You know, it's all about, it might not be much, but I'm all I think about.
Absolutely. Well, I know that one well.
Well, thank you so much, Malcolm. I think we've come to the end of our discussion. It was really good. We had a little glitches along the way. If you're willing to put in a little effort, I think you're going to hear something good. And, of course, I would ask you to get to Malcolm's Higher Power Hour. I think you'll get a lot out of that. I'm sure it's enjoyable. I haven't gone. I'm going to go now. Now I'm going to go. And I'm intrigued.
Well,
I got to listen to it now. So thank you so much for taking the time.
And thank you for inviting me. I want to say that you've got a really very wonderful venue, and it's been a pleasure talking to you, you know, prior to talking on the show and sharing some information and your recovery with me, too. Excellent, excellent program, and one that I'm going to recommend to my friends as well.
Oh, thank you, Malcolm. Yeah, everybody, you know, I think I try to push the other guy, too, and if he pushes me, that's great, but I think it's real more important. See, if I bang my own drum, it always comes out thin. But if I'm blowing the other guy's trumpet, it makes a good sound because now I'm putting a validation behind it. In the mouth of the second witness, the matter shall be established.
And I think that's one of the traditions, too, where it says we like to have our friends recommend us in toot our own horn.
Oh, that's right. That's right. We like to have our friends recommend. I forgot about it. Good for you. Thanks again.
All right.
I end with this, Rum Radio. We're in 151 foreign countries, including Mississippi, 2,700-plus towns, cities, and villages, and we're approaching 300,000 hits to the website. It's primarily the core sponsorship. There's a lot of other stuff in there, but this is like how to find a sponsor, how to find a sponsee, what a sponsor does and doesn't do, and all the interactive questions. How do I know if I'm carrying my sponsee, and how many are too many, and when can I sponsor? All the stuff that we never talk about, it's on the website. It's all programmed because we don't need anything else of that. It's big book and 12 and 12 and 16 years of experience of sponsors, and sponsors from all over the world have given us ideas, tools, and techniques that you'll find valid. No money is being made. And we're anonymous to the 11th tradition as much as we can be on Facebook, but on the website we're completely anonymous because it's not about us. He's got his hand in this thing, and this is going to have the ability to help a lot of folks. And that's what we're in business for. We're here to help, to be a maximum service to God and our fellows. So thanks again, Malcolm, and to everybody, good night, and we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org. Good night.